Good afternoon, 4:30 and 34 degrees in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Dan Conte.
And I'm Courtney Howe.
The reduction in workforce in August resulted in $96.8 million in lost wages. And we have to remember that these expenditures generate state and local taxes.
State Senator Damon Thayer says starting school in early August is hurting Kentucky's economy and reducing tax revenues.
Round County's judge executive is still hoping a controversial pipeline project will be halted.
And Ohio's governor calls for a tuition freeze next year at the state's universities.
There's a new football coach at Round County High School.
But Luke has the stocks.
Partly cloudy tonight, lows around 29 degrees. The complete forecast is coming up after this news.
A fire overnight has destroyed the home of a Martin County family. WYMT reports the blaze gutted the residence of Floyd and Jennifer Maynard within minutes. Firefighters say the couple was able to escape from their home in Lovely without injury. The Maynard's two daughters were staying at their grandmother's house when the fire began. The cause of the blaze is still being investigated.
It's been 9 months since eight members of the Roden family were murdered execution style in southern Ohio, and no arrests have yet been made. However, a relative of the victims, 38-year-old Josh Roden, was taken into custody last week, charged with drug trafficking. A neighbor, 63-year-old John McJunkin, was also arrested. He faces drug possession charges. Those arrests are said to be unrelated to the murders. However, Ohio Attorney General Mike DeWine provided an update on the original investigation last week for the Cincinnati Inquirer. He tells the newspaper it's been a tough case, but he hasn't lost hope the killers will be brought to justice.
This case is unique because of the number of bodies. You know, when you're talking about eight different bodies, basically family members, killed in a short period of time. So, you know, those cases by their nature are difficult. And, you know, I said, I think maybe 2 days into this thing, when we were talking, that, you know, I thought that there's a chance this case could take a long time. You know, I'm still confident that we're going to find who did this.
According to the Inquirer, the Roden killings represent the largest homicide case in Ohio history. The victims' bodies were discovered inside their homes April 22nd. They had all been shot at point-blank range.
State Senator Damon Thayer is sponsoring legislation to incentivize local school boards to begin their academic year later in the summer. The Georgetown Republican outlined his plan this afternoon before the Kentucky General Assembly's Interim Joint Committee on Education. He's proposing a new school calendar that would eliminate the Commonwealth's requirement that districts hold 170 instructional days per year for those districts that choose to start school on the first Monday after August 26th. Thayer says the districts would still need to have 1,062 hours of instruction, but it would be up to them how to meet that mandate. The senator contends early August starts to school are hurting Kentucky's economy.
Kentucky Marina Association and the Kentucky Travel Industry Association did a study in 2015, and it found that the August school days cost the Kentucky tourism and travel industry nearly $432 million in lost revenue as compared to July. The reduction in direct expenditures by tourists represented a 27% drop from July to August.
Thayer says the study also shows that beginning the new school year in early August costs Kentucky $96.8 million in lost wages and $45.2 million in state and local tax revenues.
Ohio Governor John Kasich is proposing a trimmed-down state budget for the next 2 years that delivers a 17% income tax and temporarily freezes tuition and fees at state's public colleges and universities. The Republican governor helps pay for the proposals with tax hikes on alcohol, tobacco products, and gas drilling. He also imposes a 0.5% increase in the state's sales tax from 5.75% to 6.25% and extends it to an additional services. The budget was rolled out on Monday. It spends nearly $67 billion over the 2 years beginning July 1st, down $4.3 billion from the previous biennium aimed declining state tax revenues. Kasich proposes modest additional spending for K-12 schools, higher education, and prisons, while flat funding or cutting many other agencies.
Homelessness has declined for the past 2 years in the Lexington area, but the city's director of homelessness prevention and intervention says that could change following last week's official count. Charlie Lanter appeared Sunday on KET's Connections with Renee Shaw.
If I had to speculate, just based on our own anecdotal knowledge of the market out there and what's going on, I think we're going to see a small uptick. We've seen some growth, and I think it's especially going to be seen among the 18 to 24-year-old youth population. We're unfortunately seeing more youth aging out of foster care and falling out of the system and landing in homelessness.
Lanter says one of the biggest challenges in the region for reducing homelessness is the lack of affordable housing. Communities across Kentucky all conducted their official count of the homeless on January 25th.
Several Republican members of the State General Assembly offered perspectives on tax reform and other key issues facing the Commonwealth during a forum last week before the Northern Kentucky Tea Party. State Representative Joe Fisher of Fort Thomas believes there's growing sentiment in Frankfort for shifting Kentucky more toward consumption-based taxes. However, State Senator Will Schroeder of Wilder says that could be tricky for counties that border other states. He talked about the issue with Spectrum Cable's Pure Politics.
There's always going to be winners and losers, right? And if you look at the Tennessee model that's heavy on sales tax, well, what will that do for border regions and border cities being so close to Cincinnati? You know, are we going to lose revenue from people? Are people going to start crossing just to get their groceries? I mean, that's something that I know the Northern Kentucky Caucus is going to have to take a look at.
The Kentucky Legislature resumes its 2017 session February 7th.
State Treasurer Allison Ball continues trying to empty out Kentucky's unclaimed property vault. Tom Latek has details.
Ball says her office has been collecting cash, safety deposit box contents, stocks, jewelry, and more since the 1940s and is holding about $500 million. She says it's a part of her job she really likes.
It's a wonderful thing for a conservative to be in charge of because, you know, I'm a great believer in property rights and I want to have people's property returned to them.
Last year, her office returned a record $25 million in unclaimed property. Find out if you have some and how to claim it at KentuckyNewsNetwork.com. I'm Tom Latek.
Still hoping the effort will be killed by the feds, Round Judge Executive Walter Blevins notes the start of a controversial pipeline project that would run through his county is not imminent. Kinder Morgan has been talking about getting the multi-county initiative underway for the last several months. However, Blevins says the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission still hasn't given the project its final approval. He adds he and the other county officials and residents haven't sent letters to the FERC asking it to review the pipeline with more security because of the potential dangers it could pose to the environment and those living near it.
We're hoping they're going to do that, take that up, and maybe slow this process down with the chance that we'll get disapproval of this project. We don't think it's really advantageous for the citizens here in Round County, and we're going to continue to push against it.
Blevin says the pipeline project also won't benefit Round County's economy since no local citizens will be hired to work on it and the county will receive no tax revenue from it.
A decision regarding the building of a medical waste transfer station in Carter County will be made soon. The Grayson Journal-Inquirer says the county's fiscal court will vote on whether or not to approve Medical Waste Services' proposed project at its February 20th meeting. Some residents in the area where the facility would be constructed have expressed concerns that it could create potential biohazards. However, Judge Executive Mike Malone insists the waste will only be processed at the facility and not dumped there, as feared by some of those who are against the project.
I love my county, and so does everybody on my fiscal court. And they're all the things that motivate them are the right reasons. I mean, they're doing everything they do for the right reasons, but this, if this becomes what these people are saying it will become, if it even got near that, we'd pull their permits. We don't have to let them operate.
Malone notes landfills are illegal in Carter County. He adds the waste that would be processed would not include body parts or human tissue. After being heated and sterilized, it would be sent to a landfill in Boyd County.
Maysville and Mason County Commissioners approved the sometimes controversial needle exchange program, more properly known as a syringe access exchange program. It operates out of the Mason County Health Department each Tuesday from 2 until 4 p.m. Clients who take part in the anonymous program are assessed at their initial visit to determine their use and need. Buffalo Trace Health Department Director Allison Adams says their main goal is to prevent the spread of sexually transmitted diseases.
Our primary goal from a public health perspective is to slow the spread of the two bloodborne diseases that are associated with intravenous drug use, which is hepatitis C and HIV. But also what it does for our communities, it keeps used needles off of our streets.
It became operational at the beginning of October, but failed to attract many clients for the first 5 weeks. However, it has since received 9 unduplicated clients. Administrators are gauging program feedback, Adams said, and can make adjustments at some point in the future, but no such changes will be made for the full 6 months.
The plans for a new 211 service in Northeast Kentucky are underway. Victoria Agee has that story.
According to the Daily Independent, the service will provide residents in Boyd, Carter, Greenup, Lawrence, and Elliott counties with support for their health and human services issues. It will be available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 211 will provide callers with various kinds of information about housing and utility assistance, disaster relief, and veterans assistance, among multiple other resources. The United Way chapter in Ashland will oversee the service and will collaborate with a Lexington chapter to create call services. Northeastern United Way Executive Director Jerry Compton says that's the most affordable way to start the service. Reporting for MSPR News, I'm Victoria Agee.
Kentucky 8 in Garrison will be rerouted on March 15th to accommodate a $4.4 million bridge replacement project. Kentucky Transportation Cabinet spokesperson Alan Blair says traffic on Kentucky 8 will be rerouted through Kentucky 1306 and 3311 for the duration of the project.
Just an old bridge that needs replacement. So, you know, there hasn't been any problems with it. It's just, you know, a 1930 structure that is past its age. It needs to be replaced.
The old steel truss bridge will be replaced with a new concrete surface steel girder bridge at the same location. The project is expected to be finished by November.
And finally, this afternoon, one of Moorhead's most iconic structures will be coming back to life this spring. Originally opened in 1941, the Trail Theater operated for nearly 60 years before closing in the late 80s. It's been used most recently as a parking garage. Owner Damon Ballinger says the old movie house is in the process of being turned into a performing arts center and tap room.
The entire building's been gutted out. We put spray foam insulation in it, exposed ductwork, exposed overhead I-beams, got the real nice industrial look, got exposed brick walls where available.
Ballinger says his partner, who is opening the tap room, is working with the State Alcoholic Beverage Control Board to get approval for that facility. While the building will keep the flavor of the old Trail Theater as much as possible, Ballinger notes it will lack its signature marquee, which was sold several years ago to those running the Poppy Mountain Bluegrass Festival.
And taking an extended look at your weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, tonight partly cloudy skies, in the evening then becoming mostly cloudy, lows around 25 degrees in the valleys and in the lower 30s on the ridges. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies with highs around 50 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy skies with lows around 35 degrees. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies with a 20% chance of rain showers in the afternoon, highs around 45 degrees. Taking a look at the current temperatures around the region, Ashland at 35 degrees, Flemingsburg at 32 degrees, Inez at 37, Lexington at 36 degrees, Winchester at 35, and it is currently 34 degrees in Moorhead.
444, you are tuned to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio. It's great to have you along on this Monday afternoon. On our feature segment, a Rowan County historian is planning another series of theater performances to offer folks another 3D look at the area's past. MSPR's Victoria Agee has the story.
J.D. Reeder is with the Moorhead Theater Guild. Since 2014, he's written, directed, and performed his special hour-long works called Back in Time. His latest performance, starting later this week, will feature the famed Martin Tolliver feud, which began in 1884 and lasted until 1887. Reeder began his series with an imaginative look at two of Moorhead's first residents and the county's namesake.
The first one brought together two of Moorhead's very first citizens from the 1850s, Mrs. Isabella Oxley and Colonel John Hargis. I brought them together with Judge John Rowan of Bardstown, who was the county's namesake. And that was a very interesting conversation that the three of them had about how the county was established and how the town of Moorhead was settled.
Since the series' debut a few years ago, Reeder says his aim has been to do one or two shows a year. He says what motivates him to continue is the desire to raise awareness about Rowan County history.
There are many people who live in the area who are keen to learn about the history of Moorhead and Rowan County, and we found that the Back in Time series is a way to get people thinking about it. It certainly isn't the definitive treatment of any of its topics, but at least it gets folks' attention and perhaps prompts them to do some additional inquiry.
Performing the Back in Time series is actually a quick process, Reeder says. Rehearsals usually last about a month and cast sizes are small. This time, however, things are different.
I have 10 actors, but those 10 actors are representing a total of 30 characters. So people are changing identities rather quickly. It's been a rather hectic time. We have to work very quickly. But I'm glad to say that these performers are all experienced and they're all very focused and they do what they need to do very quickly.
Reeder says the performance dates for the upcoming show about the Tolliver-Martin feud will be Saturday, February 4th, Saturday, February 11th, and Sunday, February 12th. The Saturday shows will be at 7 p.m., and the Sunday events will start at 2. All seats are $10, and advance tickets are available. You can get them by contacting the Arts Center at 783-9857 or by emailing Director Ashley Gillum at rcartscenter@gmail.com. Reporting for Moorhead State Public Radio, I'm Victoria Agee.
4:47, you are listening to Mountain Edition on Moorhead State Public Radio. Coming up at 5 o'clock on NPR's All Things Considered, more on President Trump's new immigration restrictions. And there's a new gridiron boss at Rowan County High School. Nathan will have that story, and he's up right now.
The Vikings have a new boss. Good afternoon, reporting for Moorhead State Public Radio Sports. I'm Nathan Gutierrez. To start things off, Rowan County High School announced its new head football coach earlier this afternoon. Former defensive coordinator Kelly Ford will be taking over the Vikings gridiron program. Ford has been an assistant for the Vikings for the last 12 years and says that changing the culture will be step one for his tenure.
People talk about tradition in football, but my 2017 motto is changing the culture. We got to change the culture before we can get to tradition. When I see Ashland and Johnson Central, we got the state champions in our districts, folks. Can Rowan County get there? Absolutely.
Ford is the fourth head coach for the Vikings in the last 5 years. And also, the University of Kentucky has promoted linebackers coach Matt House to defensive coordinator, according to footballscoop.com. House will take over for DJ Elliott, who left UK to become defensive coordinator for Colorado a few weeks back. Due to weather and travel conditions, both Rowan County boys and girls basketball games scheduled for tonight at Fleming County have been canceled. Moorhead State interim coach Preston Spradlin says two of his veteran guards continue to shine. Senior Xavier Moon had 21 points and junior Miguel Descent added 20 in the Eagles' Saturday come-from-behind win at Jacksonville State.
How fun are those two guys to watch go after it? You know, they're competing, they're talking, they're coming over, communicating with me, they're picking their team up, they're not afraid to take any shot, make any pass, and they're really special when you watch those two guys go to work in ball screens and playing with each other.
Moon and Descent are combining to average 26 points and nearly 9 assists a game for the Eagles, who will look to add to their 6-3 OVC record next Saturday at Southeast Missouri. Moorhead State women's basketball coach Greg Todd is not dismayed by his team's Saturday loss at Jacksonville State.
Lacey Buchanan's buzzer beater handed the Gamecocks at 69-68 win over MSU. Todd says Jack State just made one more play than his team did, and the Eagles did some good things in the loss.
We did some good things. Never easy on the road. I thought we guarded their perimeter well. We didn't guard their post very well, and I felt like we could have double teamed in more spots. We just didn't do a good job of that. But give them credit. It was a hard fought OVC game.
At 16-6 overall and 6-3 in the OVC, the MSU women entertain Murray State on Wednesday night at 6. Saying his Wildcats need to improve their defense and toughness, Kentucky basketball coach John Calipari is trying to get his team ready to host Georgia tomorrow in the wake of Saturday's loss to number 2 Kansas. Cal, though, isn't panicking. He says he's been down this road before with his annually young Cats.
The crazy thing, you may not believe this, but we're in this mode every year. There's something that the team needs to work on that we'll zero in on. I wish it was over the break where I was having 2 and 3 things a day where we could really go, but it isn't. Everybody in the country's in the same situation.
Tomorrow night's game at Rupp Arena tips off at 9. Louisville coach Rick Pitino liked how his number 6 ranked Cardinals performed in Sunday's 85-60 rout of NC State at the Yum Center. Donovan Mitchell's game high 28 points led Pitino's guys, who shot 50 from the field and handed out 19 assists in the process.
Guys looked inside today, made great plays, looked outside, made threes, and it's fun to watch when you see good passing like that. The defense was also very good in the second half. I told our guys we can't allow 46% shooting in the first half. In the second half, we have them to 28-37 for the game.
The win improved the Cardinals to 18-4. They visit Boston College on Wednesday. There's a new number one team in the AP Top 25 Men's College Basketball poll. AP correspondent Jack Briggs reports.
For the second time in school history, Gonzaga is the top team in the Associated Press Top 25 Men's Basketball poll. The Bulldogs replaced Villanova, which lost to Marquette last week. Gonzaga takes over the top spot with an unblemished record of 22-0. The Bulldogs received 46 first-place votes, to 6 for second-ranked Baylor, 9 for third-ranked Kansas, and 4 for number 4 Villanova. Rounding out the top 5 is Arizona. The second 5 consists of Louisville, West Virginia, Kentucky, Virginia, Wisconsin, and UCLA. This is Jack Brigg.
The Cincinnati Bengals, the NFL, and a Hamilton County, Ohio prosecutor are all mulling over their options when it comes to punishing Adam Pac-Man Jones. The veteran cornerback is going through alcohol and anger management counseling in the wake of being accused of a recent incident at a Cincinnati hotel, which includes allegations of scuffling with a security guard and police and spitting on a nurse. Jones was recently seen on video sitting in the back of a police car swearing at an officer. And finally for today in sports, the Cincinnati Reds have added a veteran pitcher. They've signed 33-year-old right-hander Scott Feldman to an incentive-laden one-year contract. MLB Reds beat reporter Mark Sheldon says Feldman, who can both start and relieve, may be a good replacement for Dan Straley, who was recently traded to Miami.
He's got a reputation for being a quality clubhouse guy, so the Reds may have gotten a guy that really suits their needs very nicely here with Feldman, and he could fit in with the other pitchers in the rotation and the bullpen pretty well. But with two spots open in the rotation and a whole fleet of young arms, he could be flexible enough to move to a bullpen role should one of their young guys be able to take a role in spring training or at some point during the 2017 season.
Feldman went 7-4 with a 3.97 ERA last season for Houston and Toronto. That will conclude your sports report. Reporting for Morehead State Public Radio, I'm Nathan Gutierrez.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Women's basketball will host Murray State on Wednesday. Tip-off is set for 6 p.m. Tickets and more information from the MSU Eagle Ticket Office at 783-2386 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the National Offices of Hilliard Lyons. This is Bud Luke with your closing stock market report for MSU Public Radio. U.S. equities closed lower, notching their worst day of the year as the new measure taken by the Trump administration on immigration sent jitters throughout the market, and the Dow did finish with a loss today of 122.65 at 19,971.13. The S&P 500 was down 13.79 at 2280.9. And the NASDAQ Composite was down 47.07 at 5613.71. New York Stock Exchange breadth was 5-2 in favor of losing stocks over winners. In economic news, pending home sales for December rose 1.6%, while personal income rose 0.3%, and the personal income was below an expected increase of 0.4%. And in corporate earnings news, Rambus reported a 9% drop in fourth quarter profit, and the stock was down sharply after hours. U.S. Treasuries were mostly steady, with the benchmark 10-year note yield holding just under 2.5% and the short-term 2-year note yield around 1.22%. The U.S. dollar fell about 0.1% against a basket of currencies. In corporate news, earnings season does continue this week in a big way as the likes of ExxonMobil, Apple, Facebook, and UPS get set to report quarterly results. And in Europe, stocks traded mostly lower, with the pan-European Stock 600 index dropping just over 1%. In Asia, stocks also fell, with the Japanese Nikkei 225 dropping 0.5%. The Shanghai equity market was closed for the Chinese New Year holiday. In the commodity markets, it was a kind of a quiet day. Gold futures for April delivery were up $4.90, settling at $1,196 an ounce. Crude oil futures for March delivery fell 54 cents, settling at $52.63 a barrel. Among Dow industrial stocks, your best performers were Disney and Walmart, and your worst performers were Caterpillar and DuPont. In the S&P 500, the best performers were Affiliated Managers Group and Alliance Data Systems, and the worst performers were Varian Medical and Transocean. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Ashland Incorporated down 58 cents at 118.33, TSX down 57 cents at 47.49, AEP up 23 cents at 63.20, AK Steel up 3 cents at 8.10, Marathon Petroleum down 74 cents at 48.34, and Community Trust Bank was down $1.35 to finish at 46.10. Reporting for MSU Public Radio, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Hilliard Lyons.
Taking a final look at your extended weather forecast for the MSPR listening area, tonight partly cloudy skies with lows around 25 degrees. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies with highs around 50 degrees. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy skies, lows around 35 degrees. Wednesday, expect mostly cloudy skies with a 20% chance of rain showers in the afternoon, highs around 45 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly cloudy skies with a 20% chance of rain showers in the evening, lows around 29 degrees. Thursday, mostly sunny skies, highs around 35 degrees. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with lows around 21 degrees. And Friday, partly sunny skies, highs around 35 degrees. And taking a look at the current temperatures around the region, Ashland at 35 degrees, Flemingsburg at 32 degrees, Inez at 37 degrees, Lexington at 36 degrees, Winchester at 35, and it is currently 34 degrees in Moorhead.
And that'll do it for us on Mountain Edition this afternoon. We had help from Chuck Moraz, Nathan Gutierrez, Braxton Howard, Sean Delaney, Ashley Chapman, Jacob Lindberg, Kenzie Thompson, and Victoria Agee. From the Kentucky News Network, Tom Latek. This is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY Moorhead, and translator W202 BHINS. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.com. MSPRnews.org. For Courtney Howell and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Dan Conte, Morehead State Public Radio News. All Things Considered is next. It's 5 o'clock.